On Daf Nun Tes, Amud Aleph, in the middle of the Amud, let's just go over Rabbi Yochanan Shita. And we said that Rabbi Yochanan, who disagrees with Rabbi Elazar, holds that Af Omer B'Tamimes Amod V'Nasa Malachtenu. And even with regard to Tamimes, a Kli, in order for the Kli to retain its status for Kabbalah's Tuma, we need Me'ein Malachto Harishona. It's got to be fit or suitable for something similar to its original Malacha. So now the Gemara has a stira L'chora between two statements, two rulings of Rabbi Yochanan. With regard to a bell, Rabbi Yochanan said that even if its clapper is removed, still it could be used as a cup. That's not Me'ein Malachto Harishona. But with regard to Tuma, in his second statement, he requires Amod V'Nasa Malachtenu, that we could still use the Kli for its original, or something similar to its original Malacha. And as we said before, if you recall, we spoke about the case of Midrasos and Amod. We had Rabbi Elazar would say that in Tumas Mess we don't need Mein Malachta Rishona, but Rabbi Yochanan requires Mein Malachta Rishona. And that seems to contradict what Rabbi Yochanan said about the case of a bell. So the Gemara has two options now. The Gemara could switch one of the two Rabbi Yochanans, and for some reason the Gemara prefers to change the first statement of Rabbi Yochanan with regard to the bell. That's called Epuch Kamaisa. And Rabbi Yochanan is not going to allow the bell to retain its tuma status if the clapper is removed, unless you can use this bell without its clapper to make a musical sound, so to speak, when he bangs it over a kli cheres. So the Gemara immediately asks, as we can anticipate, Maichaz Ibchis Kamaisa Ibchis Basra Epoch Basraisa. Maybe we should change the second Braisa, the ruling of Rabbi Yochanan, not the second Braisa, I mean the second ruling of Rabbi Yochanan that was tied to the Braisa. And with regard to a Kli, even for Tumas Mess, we would not require Me'ein Malachta Rishona, as long as you to do any Malacha with it. So Gemara says we can't switch the Basraisa, and we know for sure that Rabbi Yochanan is committed to the principle that in order for the Tumah to be rain, it's got to be Me'ein Royal Me'ein Malachta, it's got to be suitable for something at least that resembles the original Malacha, from another statement of Rabbi Yochanan with regard to a Braisa. And the Gemara says, "Hashamina leila Rabbi Yochanan deboy mi'ein malacha rishona." We have an explicit statement that's unquestionable, that Rabbi Yochanan requires that the utensil, in order to retain its tuma status, has to have a function that's similar to the original function, the sanya. Now here we have a three-way machlokes about a sandal shel behema shel mateches, and we have a metal shoe of an animal, and the Braisa says that it's Tomei. And we have to figure out how this metal shoe could be considered a Kli for a human being. What function does it have? Because the principle of Kabbalah's Tuma is that something that's only functional for an animal, like for example this sandal shel behema, which is the metal shoe of an animal, is how could it be Mekabel Tumah? I mean, it's not Mekabel Tumah, because this is something that has a function as a shoe only for an animal. That doesn't make it a Kli as far as Kabbalah's Tumah. So in what sense and in what capacity can this metal shoe be functional for a human being? And here we have three shitas. Rav, Amar Rav, Roy, Lishtos, Bo, Mayim, Bimelchama. That apparently it's a cupped sandal, meaning it has a receptacle. it's a little bit fashtunkin, it was used for an animal, but nevertheless, if you're in Milchama, which is always a very pressured situation, you don't have too many luxurious choices, and the, let's say you're a chayal, and you know need to drink water, and you don't have any other possible utensil, so that you could use it as a cup. Now, a shoe is not usually used as a cup, and yet it contracts tumah in Rav's interpretation of this braisa, despite the fact that it's not me'ein malachta rishona. Now, let's take a bell that never had a clapper to begin with. That's something else. In other words, if a, let's say, a utensil of an animal that could be used by a man, that's not what Rav is discussing. Rav is discussing the case of me'ein malachta rishona. It's not a requirement. We don't require me'ein malachta rishona according to Rav. And any secondary use of a utensil is sufficient to generate the status of a kli that makes it royal kabel tuma, even though it doesn't resemble at all the primary use of that utensil. So a shoe is not used as a cup to drink from, but it still is susceptible to tumah because occasionally it is used for that purpose. Like, for example, b'shas milchama. Now, I have a note here in which he quotes the Tosa Rosh. He says, it does not follow from this ruling that any utensil of an animal that can sometimes be used by man will contract tumah, or that a bell that never had a clapper could contract tumah because it could be used as a cup, because the case of an animal's metal shoe is different, since it was originally made with the intent that it might be used incidentally as a cup. I find that a little bit strange, but that's what he says. Now, let's go on to the second sheet. Rav Chanina Amar Roy Losuf Bo Shemeh Milchama. During a very difficult time period of Milchama, then you can use this shoe to anoint oil. Again, I doubt if Rav would be satisfied with that, because oil for anointing is generally not available during wartime. So to say that such a use would classify the animal's shoe as a kli, That's a little bit difficult. Now let's just see if Rashi adds anything here. He says, no, I don't see anything here. But in any event, let's go to the third sheet, which is the one that most interests us. Rabbi Yochanan Omar, b'shosh borech min hakrav menicho biraglov, v'rotz al gabi kotzim v'al barkanim. This metal shoe of an animal can be very, very important, very helpful for a man to be worn as a shoe when he's fleeing during the wartime. If the battle is going bad and he's got to be on the move, for example, that's called borech min hakrav, then he'll place these metal shoes on his feet and he's able to run over thorns and thistles, meaning the battlefield is not something that's very user-friendly for someone who's barefoot, or for that matter, maybe even not for regular human shoes, but if you have a metal shoe, it could really come in handy. Now, although, as we said before, Rabbi Yochanan, in the case of a bell, says that it's makabel tumah because if he used as a cup, here Rabbi Yochanan's insisting against Rav and Rabbi Chanina that we need me'ein malachta rishona, that the shoe is only susceptible for kabbalas tumah because it can be used and function in a manner that resembles its original function. So secondary is similar to primary, and it still is being used as a shoe. So now we go back to the bell situation. And the bell, according to this Rabbi Yochanan, which is explicit, would not be Mekabel Tumah, if it's no longer could be used as a bell, meaning for musical purposes, if there's no longer some semblance or similarity to its original use, and therefore Rabbi Yochanan's ruling with regard to the bell, that you can use it as a cup to retain, you know, to pour water into that receptacle, that doesn't make any sense if we want to reconcile that with Rabbi Yochanan's statement that you need Me'ein Malachta Rishonu. We're going to have to assume that Rabbi Yochanan would hold Epoch in the case of a bell. The reason why it retains its status of Mekabel Tumah is because it could still make music when you bang it over a Kli Cheres. Now the Gemara goes back to the Machlokas Shin Rav and Rabbi Chanina. My Ben Rav Le Rabbi Chanina, what be the Nafgemina between these two Shitos? And the Gemara says, Ikebe Nayu Dimois. Let's say this shoe was repulsive. And according to Rav, the only reason it's Mekabel Tumah is because it can be used as a receptacle for drinking. Nobody's going to drink from this repulsive shoe. On the other hand, according to Rabbi Chanina, it would be Mekabel Tumah because Rabbi Chanina does not require, well, but neither Rav nor Rabbi Chanina require Main Malachta Rishona. In that sense, they're in agreement. But Rabbi Chanina is willing to stretch it pretty far, and even in a case where it's highly unlikely, when the shoe is soiled and it's repulsive, that he would use it for, you know, for any other function. And Rabbi Chanina comes up with the idea that it could be used to spread oil over one's body. And what he means to say is that, you know, with oil, you're not drinking the oil, you're spreading it over your body and you're anointing yourself. A shoe could, even though an animal shoe that's repulsive, could still possibly be used in that capacity of anointing oil as a receptacle for the oil, and he spreads the oil over his body. If he's desperate enough, he will use the shoe of an animal. But Rav says, no, that's so unlikely that he'll use the shoe for oil. When is oil showing up in the battlefield? But as far as using this shoe in order to drink water, that's something that could theoretically happen during wartime, that you're desperate for something to use as a for drinking water. But if it's repulsive, if it's mois, then Rav would say that it's not the royal malacha. Forget about oil. He's not interested in that. And therefore, it not be Mekabel Tumah. Now he were asked, my bein Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Chanina. And the answer is, Ika beinayu di yakir. The difference would be in the case of a heavy shoe. And Rabbi Chanina would say that we're not dealing with a running, fleeing soldier over here. We're just using this animal shoe for anointing with oil. And basically, you know, its use is right here in the Machne. You don't have to carry it with you as you're fleeing. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan would say that this metal shoe would not be royal Mekabel Tumah. It's too heavy to move around with during battle when you're fleeing from the enemy. Now the Mishnah says, "V'lo be'ir shel zahav." We're going now back, shifting from Kabbalas Tumah over to Shabbos and Rishus Rabim. My be'ir shel zahav. Rabba Bar Bar Chana, Rabbi Yochanan, Yushalayim didahava, the Yushalayim of gold, and the golden ornament, which is an engraved likeness of Yushalayim, is called Yushalayim Shel Zahav. And now we're turning to Daf Nun Tes Omid Beis. Kida Ovid Le Rabbi Akiva L'Debesu. In fact, Rabbi Akiva, I guess he had an expert jewelry person, a jeweler who created this beautiful ornament for his wife. And this is based on a story, a very long and famous Sagarita in Dharm Daf Nun. Rabbi Akiva was married to the daughter of Kalva Savua, refused to support the young couple. Rabbi Akiva at that point was unlearned, and he tried to console his wife during that lifetime of hardship, promising her that when he would be able to afford it, he would fashion for her a golden ornament engraved with the likeness of Yerushalayim. And the Gemara in Darim doesn't tell us whether or not Rabbi Akiva actually did so, and he created this ornament, but this is what is known from Agamara. And it seems from our Gemara to be Mashlim, the Agadita in Adarim, he actually did fashion, because it says Kida Ovidle, that he actually made this beautiful ornament. Now, we said before, if you remember back on the previous Amud, that crowns of brides, right, Eteres Kalos, was forbidden from the time of the destruction of the Churban Beis HaMikdash. And the Gemara in Sota explains that crowns of brides refers to a crown that was engraved with the likeness of the city of Yerushalayim. So Lechora, that became Asur by virtue of this Gzeira after the Churban. And yet here, we're making an engraved likeness of Yerushalayim, and it's after the Churban. So the Achronim, again based on Rashi, tell us that this is not a contradiction. Our Mishnah, which forbids wearing such crowns on Shabbos, because he might or she might come to carry it, the edict of the Chachamim forbidding crowns applies only to brides and not to other women. So with regard to other women, they could wear these crowns even after the Churban HaBayis during the week, but they can't wear it on Shabbos out in Rosh Hashanah. We learned in a brisa, lo seitze isha be'ir shel zahav. A woman should not go out on Shabbos wearing this beautiful ornament called Yerushalayim shel zahav. Vim yotzes chayeves chatos. Divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir holds that this is a masa, and it doesn't have the status of a malbush or a takshit. And if you carry it in Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, or you take it out of Rosh Hashanah Yochid into Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, you're chayav achatas for a full-fledged violation of a biblical malacha of Shabbos. And that's why, according to Rabbi Meir, the Chachamim prohibit her from wearing this ornament outside on Shabbos, because if she inadvertently would carry it, she'd be chayav achatas. So that's what the Gemara is going to say in explaining Rabbi Meir. So let's talk about her wearing this ornament in Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. If that itself is a masa, then whether she takes it off or leaves it on her garment, if it's not a lavush, if it's not a takshit, then it's a masa and she's chayev eschatos. For Rabbanan Savri, on the other hand, the chacham say takshidu is certainly an ornament, and at least on a doraisa level, we have nothing to be afraid of. The Rabbanan will ask her, dil meshulfa umechavya lay the asi lasuye. We're always afraid that she may take it off in the middle of Shus Rabim to show it, display it to a friend, and then she'll come to carry it Dalad Amas in Shus Rabim. And that's why the Rabbanon prohibited wearing this. And again, that's the sheet of Rabbanon against Rabbi Meir, who says that you be chayv achatos. For Rabbi Eliezer Savar, man darko lemepak beir shel zahav. Who do you know? You know, your average, Rachel Leah doesn't wear, an ornament called the City of Gold. is Isha Chashuva, only a very special woman who could afford such a thing. It's very expensive. V'Isha Chashuva lo meshalfa u'machvi, and she's not interested in taking off the ornament, this Yerushalayim Shel Zahav, to show it to any other people. And therefore it's not also for to wear it. So just to summarize, this Braisa records a three-way machlokes from one extreme to the other with a pshar in the middle. On one extreme, we have a male chumra that if she wears it, she's chayv achatas. On the other extreme, we have the sheet of Rabbi Eliezer that she's allowed to wear it. And then we have the chachamim in the middle, who would say that she's not allowed to wear it, but it's not a chatas, it's not a violation of a doraisa, it's only a violation of drabbanon. And now the Gemara talks about a different kind of an ornament, which is a little bit similar, and that's called a klila, which is something that I think she wears on top of her head. And we'll see how the Gemara describes this a little bit later. Is Rav Asar Shmuel Shari. Rav says that she's not allowed to wear a klila out in Rishus Rav on Shabbos, and Shmuel matters it. And the Gemara says that what is the case of this machlokas? The aniska kuli amalo pligi dasa. If it was hammered out of a plate of gold or silver, everybody agrees that she's not allowed to wear it in Rishus HaRabim, because it's so significant that a woman might remove it to show her friend, and then she might likely carry it to Dalet Amos in Rishus HaRabim. Ki pligi, where is the machlokas? De aruk. Baruksa. Now, this kind of a hat was made of a fabric that was studded with gold pieces and precious stones. Marsavar aniska ikar. Umarsavar ruksa ikar. Rav is of the opinion that the gold pieces in this hat are the primary part of this ornament. It's a takshit, and it's a significant item. And a woman would wish to show it to a friend, and she might carry it, and therefore wearing it is prohibited. But Shmuel holds that the fabric is the main part of the ornament, and therefore it's not considered a significant ornament, and therefore could be worn on Shabbos. In other words, a woman would only show off to a friend an ornament that is worthy of showing off. According to Shmuel, this, we called it Aruksa, is not a fancy ornament, and a woman would not likely to remove it in public, and therefore the Rabbanan did not generate or apply the edict, the Gzeret Rabbanan of prohibiting it from wearing it in Rishus HaRabim on Shabbos. So since this Aruksa is made with a combination of basic fabric, but on the other hand it is studded with gold pieces and precious stones, we wonder which is the Ika, which is the Tafel, and what's the status of an Aruksa. Rav looks at the Ika, the gold pieces, the precious stones, and he holds that we have a problem here, she'll show it off. But Shmuel says that it's basically a fabric, and that's the main part of this ornament, and she would not consider it so significant that she would show it off, and hence we don't have to prohibit her wearing it in Rishus HaRabim on Shabbos. And now the Gemara has an alternative understanding of this machlokas. Rav Ashi Masni Lekula. Rav Ashi taught a different interpretation, Lekula, to be more lenient. The Aruksa de Kuliamalo Pli de Shari. Everybody agrees that if this tiara is made of a fabric that's studded with gold stones, nevertheless, it's mutter. You're allowed to wear it in Rishus HaRabim, and as we said before, it's basically made of fabric. Not worthy of showing off. This jewel-studded fabric. Ki pligi de aniska. They're arguing about the first case that was hammered out a plate of gold or silver. Mar Savar According to Rav, Dilma, Sholfa, Umachvia, she would take it off in the street and show it to a friend. The Osi Lasuya, then she'll carry it to Aladamas Rusa Ramar Sover, but according to Shmuel, Man Darkal and Mepak Baklila, who goes out with this kind of beautiful tiara? It's only an Isha Chashuva, and some of a woman of means. Isha Chashuva lo Sholfa b'machia. She would not take it off to show it to another woman in the street. So let's just make a few points over here. It's beneath the dignity of a distinguished woman to show her jewelry to others in the middle of the street, and therefore we'd have no fear that she would take it off. Now the Rishonim argue with the Shmuel's ruling permitting a tier of metal plate is connected to that of the ruling of Rabbi Eliezer, which Gemara quoted earlier, who permits wearing the city of gold. The Meiri suggests that Shmuel's ruling is indeed based on Rav Loza's ruling. The Rashba, however, and many other Rishonim maintain that Shmuel holds that a tira is more significant of an ornament than the city of gold, and even those Chachamim who prohibit wearing that ornament would nevertheless permit the wearing of a tira of metal plate. Amalei Rav Shmuel bar Chana l'Rav Yosef. Beferish Amartlan Mishmei Derav Klila Shari. You told us once that you heard, and we heard it from you explicitly, that Rav holds that a Klila is mutter, that wearing this tiara is permitted on Shabbos. Unless you understood like Rav Ashi interpreted this machlokes, that Rav would permit the wearing of studded fabric, which is called tiara. Omrulei l'Rav, Osa gavra rabba aricha l'Nardo, a great man who was very tall, came to Nardo, umatla, and he was limping, vidorash, and he was teaching that klila shari, that you're allowed to wear a tiara out in Rishus HaRabim on a Shabbos. Omar, so Rav declared, Man gava rabba aricha de itla. Who is that great man who's very tall and limps? Levi. It's got to be Levi. Levi became limp as a result of an injury that he suffered during a kind of ritual prostration. And he showed this, demonstrated to Rebbe, and unfortunately he was injured. That's a Gemara in Sukkah. Shma mino noch nafshei derabbi afis. Rav further all said that it must be the Rabbi Afis had already died. He was the head of the base medrash, of not just the base medrash, but the whole of Eretz Yisrael. He must have died. And therefore, v'yesiv Rabbi Chanina Bereshe, Rabbi Chanina, who was the chavrus of Levi, was now appointed to head the academy and replace Rabbi Afis. V'lo havi le inish le Levi le mesiv gabe. And Levi couldn't find a replacement for Rabbi Chanina as a chavrusa. V'ka'asi lahacha. He came to Narda and he's seeking out somebody who will teach him Torah. When Rabbi Chanina, after Rav Afias, Rav Chanina was really meant to be the Rosh Hashiva, the head of the academy, after Rebbe. Rebbe actually had chosen Rav Chanina, but whatever it is, out of Anova, let's say he gave it over to Rav Afis, and afterwards he himself, Rav Chanina, took over. At that point, Levi felt that he's a colleague on his own right. He can study with whoever he chooses. And Ka'asi Lahacha, and he comes here to Narda, and he's seeking a teacher. And if he is the if he is actually the equal of Rav Chanina, that's what he thought, then he, both in age and scholarship, he doesn't have to feel beholden to remain with Rav Chanina now that Rav Chanina has assumed the position as the Rosh Hashiva. Bedilma noch nafshe de Rabbi Chanina. How does Rav know that Rav Fias had died? Maybe it was Rav Chanina who died. V'Rabbi Office kidakai kai. Rabbi Office was still the head of the yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael. V'lo havi le inish le Levi le meisav gabe. But since Rabbi Chanina died, Levi had no great Talmud Chacham with whom he could learn. V'kasi lachi, and that's why he came to Narda. So the Gemara knows that Rav would reject this pasuk. Isa de Rav Chanina shachiv, if it's so that Rav Chanina died, Levi le Rav Ofis mechaf havi chayef le. Levi would have subordinated himself to the authority of Rav Ofis, who was older than Levi. It must have been that Rav Ofis had died. Vesu, and furthermore, Rav happened to know that Rav Chanina had not yet died. The Rav Chanina lo sagi de lo molech. It couldn't be that Rav Chanina would never head the academy. The chiavi konaych navshe the Rebbe Omar Chanina Rebbe Chama Yosef Barosh. Chanina, the son of Rebbe Chama, would head the academy. And ksivu bat tzadikim vatigzar omer Vayokom Loch, a pasuk in Eov, and this verse, which speaks of God's tremendous special treatment of the tzaddikim, and describes the power of the declaration of a righteous person, as we see now, the Gemara says, and you will make a plan and it will succeed for you. It had to be that Rabbi Chanina would head the academy at some point. When Levi came to Nardoi, it could therefore only be as a result of the death of Rav Afias. And Darish Levi ben Arda Klila Shari. Let's go back to the halachic ruling of Levi and Arda. He was matir, a tira of going out on Shabbos with this kind of a hat. Nafik esrim v'arba klile mikulin ardoi. Now I'm not exactly sure whether this was something. The language of is, if you take it literally, it sounds a little strange. But maybe when he means that 24 tiras emerge, it means that different ladies, I guess 24 ladies, you know. Or 24 different types of tira, I don't know, I'm not sure, were worn in Rishus HaRabim, in the city of Narda. Dorish Rabba Baravua b'mechoza klila shari. So Rabba Baravua taught in Mechoza that wearing a tira on Shabbos is permitted, and something similar happened. V'nafku tamnei srei klili michada mavoa. And you could see 18 tiras emerge from a single mavui in the town, one alleyway. Mechoza was a much wealthier town than Arda. And the women in a single mavui of Mechoza possessed as many tiras as the entire family female population of Narda. Now, how do we paskin in a machlokas between Rav and Shmuel with regard to wearing tiras on Shabbos? Many Rishonim, the Rosh, the Rambam, the Tur, they paskin halacha falls like Rav, as explained by Rav Ashi, that a fabric tira is permitted. A tira of metal plate is forbidden. And in general, we always paskin like Rav against Shmuel in Iser Veheter, and therefore it applies to Shabbos as well. However, these same poskim, G'dolei HaRishonim, allow the wearing of both fabric and metal tiras. That's against Rav, and that is in accordance with the view of Shmuel. So it's a sort of a combination of both Rav and Shmuel. Omar Rav Yehuda, Omar Rav Shmuel, Kamra Shari. A belt, which is ornate, and it could be a tachshit, is mutter. And the Gemara describes this ornamental kind of belt in great detail. Ika di Amri da Ruksa. Some say that Rabbi Yehuda was referring to a fabric belt. Again, it was studded, as we said before, with gold and precious stones. The Omer of Safra, and Rav Safra explains the heter here, Midi Dahavi Atalis Musheves, if you have a cloak that's decorated with gold, and it's permitted, and just like a cloak which is decorated with gold is an ornament, and it's not a masa, so to an ornate jewel-studded belt is also an ornament, and not a masa, can be worn on Shabbos. You might think that he might remove the belt to show it. The answer is, if he removes his belt, his trousers will fall down. And this you'll see in Rashi. Again, seemingly there's no reason to assume that a belt would be considered a masa. I don't know why Rashi goes out of his way to point out that it's not a masa. It certainly is a beged. It functions for the beged. But the comparison to a decorated cloak doesn't seem to be necessary. Belt is simply a beautiful ornament. It's a jewel-studded belt. I mean, why do you need the comparison to this talis musheves? So the Ritva writes that this comparison to the talis musheves is necessary to indicate that just as we do not concern ourselves with the possibility that a person will remove his cloak to show others, nobody removes their clothing in the street. This is a basic article of clothing, we don't concern ourselves with the possibility that a person will remove his belt in the street. The Ika Diamri Da'aniska, and those who say that Rabbi Yehuda was referring to a belt made of hammered gold, the Omer of Safra, in explaining this ruling according to this version of Rabbi Yehuda, like a belt worn by kings, which is hammered out in gold. And just like a Jewish king would wear a belt made of hammered gold on Shabbos, so too any person can wear such a belt on Shabbos. Again, even though a Jew, a regular Jew, is not royalty, but he's considered like royalty. And Rav Yehuda's ruling follows the view of Rav Shimon, which is stated in the Mishnah on Daf Kuf Yud Aleph. We didn't get to that Mishnah. Now the Ramban says that the belt is permitted because it's considered an item of clothing, and again a man would not remove his clothes in the street, and he derives from our Gemara that purely ornamental items worn by men cannot be worn outside on the Shabbos because he might remove them to show his friends. And this is the exception because a belt keeps his pants up and it's a beged. It's a levush. However, other Rishonim are of the opinion that the belt being discussed here is considered as a takshit, and the reason why Chazal are not concerned about the possibility that he might remove the belt, show it to his friends, is because Chazal didn't issue their gzerah with regard to men's ornaments at all. Men are not used to showing off ornaments, and in their view, the Gemara is only explaining why the belt is not considered a burden, but rather it's considered an ornament. So the original gzeira about not going out with ornaments and takshitim and jewelry in Rishus HaRabim only applies to the ornaments of women who would often remove their ornaments to show it to friends, but not to men. Omale Ravino l'Rav Ashi Kamra Ilavi Hemyana Mai. What is the deal with an ornate belt that's worn on top of a regular belt? Is he allowed to wear that kamra iloy, the belt on top? Omalei Rav Ashi said to Ravina, Trei hemyone ka'amrit. You're speaking of two belts that are worn, one on top of the other. That's for sure is asur. Who wears a second belt on top of the first belt? And that means that even though an ornate belt, as we discussed before, is considered a tachshit, you can only allow it in Rishus HaRabim when you wear it. And when you wear a belt on top of another belt, you're not wearing that top belt. It's really just carrying. And therefore would be prohibited. So when the Gemara says that wearing two belts is prohibited, that applies when the two belts are serving the same function, they're tied down on the same beged. If one belt would tie an inner garment, let's say in his underwear or something like that, and another belt ties his outer garment, then both would be permitted. They both have a use, and they both function as begadim. Omar Avashi, hai risuka. Now, what exactly is a risuka? It's a wide strap of material that was tied around one's body, otherwise known as a corset. E isle mafre chaisa shari. If it has ties attached to it, then it's mutter to wear it. Ilo asur. So what's this all about? The narrow strip of material tied around one's body, these ties of corsets, are tied tightly around the body. Therefore, Chazal were not choshesh that maybe he would loosen it, it would fall, he would carry it in a rishus or rabbin. If it, on the other hand, had no ties, and it could not be tied tightly around the body because of the width of the strap, then Chazal asked wearing it in Rosh Hashanah because they were choshesh that it might fall off, and he would carry it home in Rosh Hashanah. Now the Mishnah said, V'lo bekalta. The Gemara says, my kalta. And the Gemara answers, menakta fare. This is a kind of a, if you want to call it a bib, that's tied tightly around the neck, and it catches all sorts of, spillings or crumbs or whatever. Now, this was a very ornate bib, and since it was fastened to a woman's neck by means of some wide strap, and the strap was strung through loops on the bib, tied tightly around the neck, decorated with gold, it was a tachshid, an ornamental bib. Others say that maybe the kalta was open-ended half circle of precious metal placed around a woman's neck, securing the open corners of her shirt. And the question is, why is this asur? And I guess the answer is because it wasn't tied so tightly around her neck that would strangle her, and it might fall off, or alternatively, because it was so ornate that once again she might be tempted to show it to her neighbor and then carry it. And with regard to nizamim, we're talking about nose rings, nizmei af. Those are prohibited. And the exclusion here is for nizmei ha'oznayim, meaning earrings, which would be mutter, because very difficult to remove them to show them to others. Could be that the ears were covered with various bands, and the earrings were underneath, or the top part of the earring was underneath those bands. It would be very complicated to take off the earrings in Rishus HaRab, and therefore it's mutter. V'lo b'tabas she'en olel chosem, and she's not allowed to go out with a ring that has no signet. Again, if it's with a signet, we said that would be a violation of biblical hotzah, that's a real masah. But in a case where there's no signet, then this could be a beautiful, ornate, kind of takshit. So on the deraisa level, there's no isa, but the rabbanu were worried she might take it off. And the Gemara is medayik from the Mishnah that ha'yesh oleh chosem chayeves, that if it had a chosem, a signet ring, would be a chiyuv chatas, alma lav tachshitu. It's not called a tachshit. It's not an ornament. It's worn, in order to sign documents. We have a brisa that says, actually it's a Mishnah, which is in Kalim, that says, tachshitei noshim tmeim, V'elu heim tachshitei noshim katlos nizamim v'tabos v'tabas bein sheyesh oleh chosem bein shein oleh chosem v'nizmei ha'af. Now this Mishnah clearly indicates that we're talking about, we're talking about a ring that bears a signet, and it's considered a tachshit, because it says, Bein she'yesh aleich hosem, bein she'ein aleich hosem. And it's mekabel tuma. And a ring to be mekabel tuma would have to have the status of a tachshit. So the answer is, and here we're on daf nuntesa beis mamish towards the bottom of the amud, Omer Rab Zera, lo kasha, ha Rabbi Nechemia, ha Rabbanan. Now, before we mention this machlokas between Rabbi Nechemia and Rabbanan, which I believe we touched upon in the past, I'm not sure, but let's just go over the Gemara's kasha. We were medayik from the Mishnah that if yesh aleich hosem, she be chayv as a masa, which means it's not a tachshit. And yet, from the Mishnah in Kelayim, we see that every tabas, whether it's yesh aleich or ein aleich hosem, is considered a tachshit, and that's why it's susceptible to tumah. Okay, now let's see if we can get a clue about Rab Nechemia and Rabbanan. Bisanya, we're going to have a brisa in there that records both shitas, Rab Nechemia and the Rabbanan. Rab Nechemia is of the opinion that the tumah status of a tabas is determined by the composition of its signet. Obviously, Rab Nechemia holds that the question of whether a signet ring is a masa or a tachshit would depend upon whether the wearer uses the signet portion of the ring or not. Since a woman, generally speaking, doesn't use or rarely uses a signet is used mostly for documents and so forth and so on. Therefore, the ring is considered a masa. The ring was made of metal. The signet was made of a kind of wood called almog, tmeah. Okay, all this is the sheet of the Chachamim. He shall almog v'chosma shall mateches tahora. And this is the view of the Chachamim. And according to the Chachamim, a ring that's made of wood is not susceptible to tumah because a Kli Eitz has to have a base kibul. Pshute Kli Eitz are not makabel tumah. In the case of Pshute Kli Matechos, they are makabel tumah. So according to Chachamim, they want to determine the tumah status of the signet ring following the ring rather than the signet. If the ring was wooden, then it's tar because it doesn't have a base kibul. If it was made of metal, then it's tame. Rav Nechemia mitame, he wants to say that even a metal signet ring is tame, and that's a pella when you think about it, because you know, if it's made of metal. Oh, okay. So in this case, if we're talking about if it's made of metal, then the Rabbanan say that it's tmeya, because again in the case of metal, there's halacha pshutim that are makabel tumah. But hoya Rab Nechemia Omer b'tabas halach achar chosoma, the status in tumah of a ring follows the composition of the chosem of the signet, and b'ol halach achar simlovav. When you're talking about the tumah status of a yoke, an ol, then it depends on the composition of its pegs. So according to Rab Nechemia, so again, what we said before is that when it comes to the Shitas Chachamim, if the ring was made of wood, it's tahora because it's pshutei kliyets, but pshutei mateches, kli mateches, amakabel tuma. And therefore, the Rabbanan say that whether it's the ring is makabel tuma depends upon whether it's made of eitz or of metal. Now, Rav Nechemia says that a wooden ring that has a metal signet on it is makabel tuma, even though it's a wooden ring. And you might ask, well, if it's a wooden ring, then why is it makabel tuma? It doesn't have a base kibbutz, it's shutei kliyets. And the answer is that the status of the ring as far as kabbalah's tuma is determined by the signet, which in this case was made of metal, and that makes it susceptible to tuma, even though the ring itself is a wooden ring. A metal ring, for example, with a wooden signet, according to Rabbi Yehuda, would not, or Rabbi Nechemia, would not be makabel tuma, even though it's made of primarily of metal, but nevertheless the signet is wood, and that's not makabel tuma because it's pshutei kliyets. And Rabbi Nechemia says that betabas halech achar chosma, in other words, the main essence of a ring is not, you know, the material that makes the ring, but rather it's the chosim itself. And if it's a wooden signet, it's not susceptible to tumah. If the signet is made of metal, it is susceptible to tumah, because that's how he defines the essence of the ring. However, in the case of an ol, according to Rav Nechemia, everything depends upon the pegs. We have a little bit of a diagram here. The yokes back in the time of the Gemara did not really follow the contours of the neck of the ox as they do today. Rather, they were straight bars that were placed over and under the necks of the ox, and the bars were connected with straight pegs that fit into holes in the bars on either side of the ox. And these pegs held the bars in place, and they enable the yoke to function. So these pegs, really, according to Rabbi Yehuda, they define the ol, because they keep it in place. And therefore, the status of Kabbalah's tuma, according to Rabbi Nechemia, with regard to an ol, is going to depend upon these pegs, which enable the yoke to function. And it's again, Rabbi Nechemia l'shitaso. And then you have to decide whether the pegs are made of wood or they're made of metal. And here on Daf Samach Amud Aleph, Bekolov, okay, we're talking about a display board, Halach Achar Masmerosov, and we follow the nails. And the display board was a kind of a pillar. It was wide at the bottom, narrow at the top. And sellers of belts and straps would put up a stand in front of the windows of the shops. And this pillar was studded with nails. The shopkeepers would hang their merchandise on these nails to display them. And Nechemia says that if the nails are made of metal, the display board is makabel tuma, even though the pillar itself was made of a flat wooden utensil, because susceptibility to tuma depends upon the main function, the primary element, which in this case is the nails. And we'll find something similar in the case of a sulam, of a ladder, halach achar shlivosov. And it depends upon the rungs, because once again, if the rungs are made of metal, it's makabel tuma, this ladder, because the function, even though the sides and the main part of the ladder is made of wood, but the essence of a ladder are the rungs that you use to climb up. And if they're made of metal, it's makabel tuma, the RC. If you talk about a balance scale, something that's used to balance something, which was very common back in the day, is halach achar shalshalosav. Everything depends upon the chains. And this is the shita of Rav Nechemia. Whereas Chachamim omrim hakol holech achar amaymid, the status of tuma depends upon the maymid, which is the main portion of the item that provides its support. So, according to Rabbanan, a signet ring, for example, Its status depends upon the composition of the ring itself. That's called the maimed. Whereas according to Rav Nechemiah, everything depends not on the maimed, but rather on that part of the object that functions. Here the signet is the part of the ring, which is, you know, that is the crucial part. And therefore a signet ring, according to Rav Nechemiah, is not a tachshit. And that's what we had in the Mishnah that says that Bein Sheyesh Alechosem. No, I'm sorry. when it says in the Mishnah that a signet ring is not called a tachshit, that's the Shita Rav Nechemiah. And the Mishnah that we had that says the signet ring is considered a tachshit, that reflects the sheet of the Rabbana. Because the Rabbana are not concerned about the signet, the chosem, they're concerned about the main davar ha-maimid of the ring itself, and that's ornate, and it's a tachshit. Whereas, according to Rav Nechemiah, what defines the nature and the category of the ring is basically its signet, as we saw in Kabbalah's Tuma. And its signet is not in any way, shape, or form a tachshit, and therefore we could say that it would be us, or it would be a masa on Shabbos. Now, Rava Amar Litzdadim Ketani, this is, again, another possible resolution of the contradiction that we had with regard to the status of a ring. But it's pretty late, so we'll stop here on the top of Daf Samach Omer Aleph, line 4. And Rishon will pick this up next week.